ました。
Hi, I'm Neil, and welcome to the Crosscast. Happy New Year to you all, and I hope you managed to get in some miles over New Year and watch some, if not all, of the International Cyclocross over the past week. Now, in the last show, we previewed four races, and okay, I must admit, I thought that we got the course descriptions pretty well right, thanks to, of course, our previous guest, Finn Mansfield, who raced kind of all of those races last year. As you'd expect in today's show, we are going to review all the action from Brennan Abal, Gillingham and Holst Not Holst. We're going to give credit to the improved skills that we have seen in reseating chains, but we have to report that more work is still needed on bike throws and sprints. We will inevitably talk about the old chestnut of how long a race should be. Now, I'm joined in the studio for the first time this year by Matt Payne, and it's the first time we've caught up, actually. So, Matt, is there anything that you're hoping this year will bring to us?
I'm hoping for a year where my skills improve enough that I don't crash and end up injured or unable to ride for a period. That'd be nice. So improved skills coming my way would be good. And some live events. That'd be great. So yeah, some live events would be mega.
Yeah, I think it would be great. You know, for me, I would hope that this year I can actually hear you on the mic for real while we're racing.
Thank you very much.
So rather than hearing you over an internet connection, that we could get some series, we could get some championships, we could get some races running in the UK.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not sure
I'd like to
be.
See real bodies racing in real life. You know, that's, I mean, at the moment, the highlight, you see real bodies ride by or in the distance when you're out on the bike or out with a dog. It's crazy. But yeah, some real competition, real life, even local, national, who knows. But yeah, that'd be really, really nice. I mean, I don't think we've realised how much we missed it until it disappeared. And then you get the odd taste of it because there's the odd race and you think, oh yeah. But yeah, that would be very, very nice.
Yeah, we will. Time will tell. You know, we can see this time next year, will we be, you know, all those things that could be a distant memory. But I'm not going to mention any of them because they've brought us so much stress, not only over the past year, but over the last four or five. So yeah. Let's actually go back to Brennan then. Let's look at some racing, some cross, which of course is what we're here for. So it was the final race of 2020. And not only that, but the final race for Nicholas Klepper. And for Dieter van Turnhout, Nicholas is only 25, Dieter, of course, 35. So Klepper actually finished ninth at Bredener, and that was his 40th top 10 in the past four seasons. So I mean, what a great career he's had. Disappointed he's calling it, you know, hanging up his cleats so early. Dieter van Turnhout finished 18th. Now, he's been racing elite since 2007. And I'm not going to give you the stats for how many times he's finished in the top 10 and top 20, because I looked at the list and I thought, that's going to take me a very, very long time to add them all up. But he's been a great rider. You know, of course, overshadowed by his younger brother, who finished third, you know, Michael van Turnhout at Bredener with Aerts and second, and Van der Poel, his first of the year. After Christmas period, Frank finished third, Kant second, and Vass dominated to take her first elite win in Belgium.
Great racing. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I started off thinking, oh, maybe this is a bit dull and it's not great. And then I kind of got into it and it was very odd. I kind of rolled into the first half of the women's race, which I watched first, and thought, yeah, okay, this is a bit, yeah, samey, but actually there were some real subtleties in the riding and I really liked that. I think the men's race was probably better than the women's overall in terms of watching and excitement, and I thought it was a really nice just to see them actually sort of going for it, and it felt like they'd maybe been holding back previously. We came into this wondering who was going to target what, And I don't think that really played out. Everybody kind of got race head on and actually just went for it, which was really, really good to see. I mean, there were some issues for people and there were some close things and there's some great bits on the coverage and there's some not so great bits on the coverage and a few crashes and bumps and bangs. But overall, I thought kind of as expected at the top, but still keeping it interesting. What do you reckon, Neil? Was it a favourite race for you?
I enjoyed watching it because there was so much different, so many different things that happened. We did have a different lineup to, yeah, it wasn't such a strong field as perhaps we might have expected, or what we've seen from some of the other races. But I loved some of the bits of it. You know, Curtis White getting that hole shot. You know, it was absolutely great, you know, seeing someone else at the front and just thinking, right, this is my chance. If I can be at the front for a minute, that's a real achievement. And I'm sure it would have gone away, and that's going to be one of the most memorable races ever. You know, so seeing people like that, you know, seeing Vermeersch up there. I really enjoyed watching that. But yeah, one of the things that I saw on there was when we had Van der Poel and Aerts riding together, and you just looked in there at their expressions. And after, you know, they were together for quite a while, and at one point, you know, we had a conversation at home of, you know what, I think that Aerts is riding at Van der Poel's pace, he's not riding at his own pace, and it was just a matter of time.
Yeah, I think that was the case, and for me, Matthew was classic Matthew. You know, the gloves came off. He did his classic sort of powering away. And you thought, yeah, it's fairly predictable. But when you saw the course, Tunis was a shoo-in for that second place, really. And I thought Michael Van Torenhout put in a great ride, actually, to go as far up as he did. I thought, is this going to be his day? Is this the one that we're going to see him running away with it? And he didn't. But do you know what? I thought he put in another nice ride. Whether it was my standout ride of the day, I'm not so sure. That may be Tom Mewson's ride, because Tom, all of a sudden, pushed himself right up into fifth place. And I know there wasn't maybe the same strength in depth in the middle of the field, but I thought that was a really good ride by him to push himself right up there. And I thought maybe for me, it was maybe a return to some old form, but I'm not sure the results after that bore that out, that's for sure. The women's race, great racing. I love seeing Alicia Frank looking like she's coming back into form and clearly battling. Sana was like the Sana of old. Sana really wanted it.
Yeah.
And I mean, them coming in together, that finish was awesome. That was classic stuff where you saw them coming in together and you're just thinking, this is who's going to go for this, who's going to get this. They're both close, they're both great riders. And for me, that final battle was really interesting with Hunsinger behind closing in. Great ride by Anna Kay. You thought, oh, is she coming back into form again? So I thought there was some interesting performances further back, but for me, Alicia Frank coming back. You know, we know she's had a hard time and she's back in action and it's being rewarded. And let's not forget, that, of course, the winner, Blanca Katavas. And she was in a different class. It clearly suited her and she clearly was giving it everything, not caring what happened on the days after. It was for that day. Mm-hmm. And I think it's probably paid off for her because you can't see her staying pretty much unsigned by a major team next year. Definitely not.
Yeah, and you look at the, you know, who was there in that top 10. We've got so many different nationalities, which we see so often in the women's racing. Sana Kant being up there, yeah, I agree. I think that she was starting to look really strong and ahead of strong riders. Yeah, more issues again for Katie Compton, running around with a roll tub, which is a bit reminiscent of other important races.
I think Katie definitely doesn't want to be buying a lottery ticket anytime soon because her luck is not in. Don't go near a casino. Don't go near a one-armed bandit because you're just going to be pouring money away at the moment because she's got zero luck. And you know, you talk about getting the rub of the green in snooker and it all goes the right way. No, not on this season, almost, for Katie. You know, you can't fault her determination, but results-wise, performances-wise, she's got such great pedigree, and you're expecting her to see her in top fives. And there's always seems to be an issue, taken out on a corner by somebody, stuck in glutinous mud, rolls the tub. She's got the class, she's got the strength, she's got the skills. Surely it's only a matter of time before she's back in action at the top. But time's running out. We've only got a limited number of races left.
Yeah. And she's had that this season where everything has gone wrong. And I kind of don't want to know if there's a backstory, really. You know, if the training's been really disrupted or quite what. Yeah, I want to see her get another win. You know? That's really what I'd love, and I'd love to see her face if she can manage it. But
yeah.
you can't blame her for not trying. She was one of only four riders that I counted who actually raced the four races across the 5 days.
Yeah.
So Compton was also Kant. So Sanna rode four in 5 days. Van Alphen was there at all of the races, and Matthew van der Poel, as we will come on to, I'm sure, who rode each of the four races in 5 days. So when I started looking through, I was expecting to find more, but actually, no, it's just those four that I could find in the finishing lists.
Wow. That surprised me. Three humans and Matthew van der Poel.
After Bredener, we moved on to... We had a day off, New Year's Eve. Last day to get your festive 500 in.
Did you make it, Neil?
I did, yeah. Only just, but yeah, I did make it. It's normally New Year's Day is that traditional new kit day. But this time, there weren't so many big changes. Last year, I vividly remember the beaming smile of Alvarado when she had her new kit last year on New Year's Day. You know, and so there were some really big ones last year. This year, the only big difference was that both Van Aert and Vos are riding for Jumbo-Visma now, and they've got their resprayed bikes, which...
I'm not sure Bruce hasn't... But that's where Bruce has been. We've not seen him. It's because he's been rattle can spraying their bikes black with dodgy stickers that don't even line up.
I know. I just can't believe that... I mean, it does look like a DIY job in a garage. So I was expecting them to be a little bit more subtle than that. Who else did we see on New Year's Day in Bale? We saw Isabeat back a month earlier than I expected. So he had that Zolder crash where he was off in the ambulance and was back in Bale, riding well as well. It wasn't just making up the numbers and stepping off, which is, to be honest, what I thought was going to happen. But in the men's race, Van der Poel took his second win in 3 days in 1 hour and 18 seconds. He was followed by Wout van Aert and Tom Pidcock, cracking three riders at the top there. In the women's race, third was Bettsma, and second was Brand, and first was Alvarado in a time of 39 minutes, 52 seconds. So we had another... Well, in some ways, it was just a standard Bale, from what I could see. Yeah, it was like the conditions were normal for Bale.
No. Were you watching the same race? It was nothing like normal. It was greasy. Normally, it's muddy or it's dry. We had greasy. And I think what we had was a combination of the cold plus the amount of use it's had, because people haven't been racing and they have been training. And because that facility's been open pretty much all the way through, everybody's been out there riding the lines in. So we had slot corner, where it was all gathering the only bit of moisture. We had new banks on there, so they were different. So we had that long traversing bank and a couple of drops down. We had grease that looked like somebody had slopped it out of a drive chain or a gearbox all the way down the whoops. And we saw people ejected out the sides of the course much more than normal. And then we had ascents that were really tricky, much trickier than normal because the conditions. I mean, don't get me wrong, it was my favourite race by far. I don't always say this every show, but It was my favourite race of the year so far. It's Bâle. It's one of my favourite courses. And I know the riders, Finn was saying, no, it's scary, it's big, it's steep. But watching, I thought it was great racing and really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was one of the classic races, and there were some real subtle things going on there. Some really good battles. You had Tom Pickett taking the battle out to people. You've got Brand out there riding really, really strong. Alvarado making mistakes in some odd places. Tom riding banks that other people didn't. You got Bessemer, classic strong Bessemer, being aggressive and being right up in people's faces. Plus, you adding people like Tunaerts going in there. That first few laps of the men's race was really difficult to tell who was going to settle into position and take that victory. And I thought that was all due to the course conditions and the course as well. It's not just the riders, because otherwise we get the same thing everywhere. It is definitely, I think, that course and the weather conditions. For me, it was only business as usual in terms of being fantastic.
I think some of the things that looked different were because they had some different camera angles. And so there were bits that I think possibly looked bad. I mean, I still... That whoops descent. Okay, people were, you know, sliding out on that a little bit this year, but that is nothing different to normal. You remember Lo Sells last year had an awful crash go down,
but
there.
We saw people doing it time and time again, and even the most skilled riders were going flying. I mean, the creatine Frischdick's women's team, I think they must have been on tyres that were specifically designed for anything but those whoops. Because they seemed to come off every time they came down there. And even in the men's race, you saw a couple of moments where Tom Pickock had it sideways and only just got it back. And I know we've seen it tricky before, but we've also seen them pulling whips up on there as well.
That's true.
So it didn't look
like
that
was going to happen. Yeah.
For me, the racing was great. I love the changes in kit, you know, notwithstanding the bike. I like the slightly subtle changes to the Jumbo-Visma kit. I think even better, Paul Sousan's kit now. Absolutely love it. And I actually like the new Baloise Lions kit. You know, the Trek kit is good, but my favourite definitely is the Paul Sousan's kit. I would happily spend money on that, I have to admit. I think it looks really, really nice.
Yeah, I mean, other kit that was there that isn't normally, because we had Anna Tauber in her orange and white kit, is it? We've seen her coming out on the cross bike a little bit. I love watching Anna Tauber ride on the mountain bike. Don't often get to see her on the cross, but I was so delighted to see her riding. The other thing that we get with Bâle, it's a mystery to me, is why do they have the reverse pit? You know, it is a reverse pit every time because you don't have a lot of choice as to where the course goes. And it's purpose-built. It was designed for cross. And I say this every time, but it's beyond me why it would be a reverse pit. It makes an absolute nightmare.
I wonder whether it's just like a two-fingered salute to the commissaires who have played Sven through his life, and he's just making life really difficult by giving him a reverse pit to look after.
Yeah, well, maybe Sven is trying to be really difficult to the commissaires, because he's gave him an awful job at this race, which I think we will lead into. the controversy that surrounded the race. This year, this race has been held up as the example of when the race was too short for the women's category.
I think it's not just being held up as an example, is it? It is an example that is undeniable in how it's impossible, if you have any kind of mathematical knowledge whatsoever, or race experience, or a combination of the two, to understand the race length. Whereas if you tried hard, you could maybe work out why some of the other races went short. And this one, not a clue.
I think that there's a fundamental problem with this. Now, predicting race duration is a mug's game. And it's really hard to do. And you give that job to the commissaires on every time there's a race. They have to do it. Yeah, so they take their decisions and they have to stick with their decisions. But the problem here is that the women's race was too short. Let's just revise what the rules say. The rules say that the women's race must be between 40 and 50 minutes. But then there's another rule that says for a World Cup or the World Champs, the race must be as close to 50 as possible. Okay, so those are two separate rules. So don't get confused by the race should be as close to 50 minutes as possible. Whether that's your opinion, which it is in my case, and that doesn't matter. This isn't what the rules say. The rules say between 40 and 50. This was always going to happen. I declare that this was always going to happen in this race. Last year, the lap length was 2.7 kilometres and the lap time was about 9 minutes 45 for the women. They increased the lap length by adding in an extra uphill bit and that sideways mm-hmm. reverse. So that extended the length of the lap. And there was another subtle difference where they had it made it slightly longer where previously there was a VIP tent. But apart from that, it was identical, absolutely identical. So they made the lap longer by... And before you say, what about that triangle bit they took out? Well, they moved effectively. There's a bit at the bottom of the course where they moved that higher up the bank and we got that traverse mm-hmm. out and back. So it meant that the lap went, instead of being 2.7 kilometres, it's now 2.9 kilometres, which is an extra 8%. So you add 8% to 9 minutes 45, you get bang on 10 minutes. Bang on 10 minutes based on last year's times. So you are always going to get the situation where you've got commissaires who are given a 10-minute lap, and that's the worst possible lap time that you can give to a commissaire, because they've got to have this race between 40 and 50 minutes. So if they go short, so if they say a four-lap race, it's going to be very, very close to 40. If they go five-lap race, it's going to be very, very close to 50. They can't win. It's impossible for them to make a solid decision there because of the extended lap. So I think I think they were given an impossible task there. And the fundamental problem is the rules that need to be, first of all, 50 minutes and to be clear and consistent across all the categories. And I think that they were, that the lap length, I sound like a local league committee here, but the lap length was too long. So it meant we had so much more. First of all, you got so much more to marshal and all of those side of things. And the laps were too long. So therefore, if they were shorter, it would have given the comms at least some possibility of making it the length that they wanted it to be.
I agree. Rules change. Let's change the rules. Let's make it really clear. Let's make it consistent everywhere. 50 to 60 minutes. That's it. Dead simple. 50 to 60 minutes, both races, yep. Men's and women. Same for everybody, 50 to 60 minutes.
Yep.
Totally and utterly. No variation. That gives you a 10-minute window. I agree that by having it very close to what is a theoretical 10-minute lap, you are making life a little bit difficult. However, what you need to factor in is that in the lap times that the commissaires were faced with on the day, you have a 15-second time from the start of the race to the lap time. So you've got an extra 15 seconds to knock off the lap time. If you take that from the first lap time and work out the lap times from there, when they had to extrapolate it out, it doesn't take much to work out. You should have been on another lap for me. And if in doubt, bear in mind that these guys have been at the same races all the time. They've all seen the races. They're all enthusiasts. And they're all doing the best they can. However, the women's races have got quicker, generally. And those courses, and Bell particularly, tends to ride in rather than ride out.
So,
because Bell gets quicker, not slower.
That only happens if you've got a Vass at Bredene or a Van der Poel at most places, where the lead rider is the person taking the lap time every time. That only happens then. If you look at Bâle, they came over the line at 10.02, 20.07, 30.09. So each lap was about 1 minute, 3 seconds. Sorry, 10 minutes and 3 seconds every time they came over the line. It was about 10 minutes and 3 seconds. And then the last lap, you've got Alvarado coming in 39 minutes 52. Then you've got Brand coming in 39.56 and Betsema at 40.11. So, you know, they came in within 20 seconds of each other. And yeah, and it doesn't mean that the race is long enough. I'm not trying to say that at all. I don't think that, you know, as you know, we agree, it should be 50 to 60 for men and women. It's dead as straightforward. But in this case, yeah, it's, I, you know, what would have happened if they'd have put another lap in? Well, I did a bit of modelling on this. And yeah, they would have come in as you'd expect, but they, and I think they would have come in at a few seconds under 50, which would have been the correct thing to do. But it's, I think you need to say where is the problem? And the I think we both agree the
problem is in the rules. They need to be rewritten first. However, if this was an isolated incident, if this was a one-off, if this was the only race in the year when it just got really close that there was a problem, everyone would go, yeah, you know, it's one race. But it's not. It's consistent. And I banged on it ad nauseum last time about it, about how it's always the same races, it's always the same places, it's the same commissaire teams, it's the same area of the world that has this same attitude. And to be honest, my patience personally has run out with it. I think it sucks. I think it's disrespectful to the women who are racing. And I think, to be honest, if they could take disciplinary action, they should do against commissaires and actually take them out. And at the risk of literally saying, well, you need to send some more commissaires in. Because it can't continue. It puts people off. It's not exactly inspiring for the athletes who are racing, never mind the future generations. And then if you add in the fact that there's a lot of hard-working officials who don't get jobs on these races, then surely it's time to actually step up.
Whenever it's a 10-minute lap, whenever I see that come over the line the first time and it says 10 minutes, my heart sinks because I know exactly what's going to happen. And then you get a strange thing like what happened at... it wasn't Gillingham. It was at Holst, where they come over when it's a 7.5 minute lap, and I thought, oh, thank goodness for that, they'll do 5 minutes. Turns out they didn't. I thought they'd do five laps. Turns out they didn't. They did one more lap than actually they needed to, according to the rules. So somewhere along the line, yeah, they can do it. There are people who can make it longer.
Lucinda Brown put a post out saying the race distances, this really sucks. You know, this is the World Cup leader. This is the rider who's won all the races this year. She's sitting around going, come on, guys, let's do this. And it's in the power of the UCI. They don't have to wait. Make an executive decision, guys. Lead. Show leadership. Mm. Come on. Step up to the mark, guys. You're in a position of power. Use it and put a position out and go, well, you are going to run between 50 and 60 minutes. And if you don't do it, we'll actually discipline the officials and we'll take them out of the action and we'll replace them and show some leadership in this, because what's the point in having a governing body if they don't govern? You know, it's how many times have we had this conversation across cast? Every series?
Yeah.
That's nuts. Absolutely nuts. Anyway, enough. Yeah, otherwise my soapbox will break from me jumping up and down on it and getting all grumpy.
So there we go, with that joy on the first day of the year.
I'm not sure I should tell anybody just what yours and my social, you know, our message was like backwards and forwards on the same day. Happy New Year. By the way, what a bunch of bleep, 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 bleep. Can't believe what happened in bleep, 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 bleep. Just like, Happy New Year, guys. Thanks. Yeah.
Oh, where can we go from here? Let's go to Gillingham. One day later, Gillingham, and we had Matthew van der Poel. winning for the third time in 4 days. So, yeah, that's not bad. Now, if I could win 3 times in 4 seasons, I'd be pretty happy. Behind him, we had Pidcock, and then in third place, Jens Adamt, which was a surprise, actually, I must admit, for me, but a great third place. And then in the women's, we had Vass. That was her second win in, was it her second win in 3 days? Yeah, second win in 4 days. Sorry, second win in 4 days. For Vass, another dominant ride ahead of Van der Heijden and Kant. Another sprint for the finish. So I'm not really sure what I thought about Gunnigum. It was almost, it could have been closer racing. I think the course, if it had been closer racing, could have been a lot more enjoyable. But Matt, last time we previewed, I think what we described as the flyovers for cats, those little mini flyovers. Did you enjoy them?
I watched it first time, and apart from dying with laughter about the flyover for cats bit, I actually thought, well, they're kind of like really dodgy because you end up running down them if you're not careful, particularly in the men's race. You know, there's that pressure from the guys behind pushing up against them. They were always pushing them off the far side of it every time they, you know, a bike came up behind and bumped them off this step. But I really loved it. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not sure I want to go for a drink with the guys in the bar because they've invented a race and it's amazing to have such a race from two brothers who just sort of sat down and had a beer, because I heard that quite a lot. And I think I'd raise a beer to them, though, because I thought it was really good. I know what you mean. It's kind of like every feature in a UCI course in miniature. And I've seen that, and I agree. But I didn't think it detracted from it because it still had all the elements. There was some close racing, there was some slips, there were slides. It never kind of got going almost because there was nothing long enough to get the power down. There were no long stretches, there was no big features. But as a mini race, I thought it was brilliant. I actually really enjoyed it, and I actually sat and sort of, apart from giggling at the flyovers, I actually thought it was really good. I liked the racing. I thought it was quite close. And there were people moving up and down the bunches. And the gaps didn't open up because it wasn't that hard. Therefore, people could bridge across. And it was not decided. One mistake or slip, even by Van der Poel or Katavas, you could have seen a change of position. And I think, for me, if there was a... You know, that's what racing should be. It shouldn't be decided to the very end, really. Not too often, certainly. And there's some very close racing in it. And I thought I actually really enjoyed it. I bet it's a good fun course to watch. And it looked like you could see a lot of it really close by.
Yes.
And it was inventive. There's somebody who's designed a cross course. I think that's great. I love watching inventive design. And I do think we do need these different courses, because it's what spurs on course design. It's what changes things. It's like throwing in Toyo tyres. It's like throwing in a bus stop turn round a Toyo tyre on the banking. All those things are what push the sport forward. They're things that drive on change, and that's what we need. So, yeah, numbers out of 10? 9 out of 10 for it, I thought. What about you, Neil? What would you give it out of 10?
I'll probably be a bit lower than that, but I do set my exams to be quite hard.
Pass mark for Neil's exams too.
I think I'd go for a 7. I'll go for a 7 if you're saying it's a 9, because I think that what I liked about it, it did feel like a more of a local type of race. It had some bits in it that were hard. Every lap, they were difficult. You know, you could see anyone slipping off.
Yep.
On any lap, and obviously the better riders tried to ride it. I imagine, although we didn't get much coverage of those further down the field, those further down didn't try to ride some of the sections there. I did enjoy it. I was pleased, actually, that they changed the start. People won't be that familiar with how it used to be, because it was very, very dodgy when it went down the high street the other way. So that did seem to be an improvement. But Yeah, I mean, if it goes back to that, you're just careful when you get around the corner, the sketchy stuff on every course.
I don't think they needed to. I thought the whole thing as a package, it worked really, really well. And I think it was, it shows that there were so many incidents that were little, but they separated the riders. And like you say, the good riders rode, or they chose to run when it was faster. It made the riders think. And to do that on something that's not on a mountain, or something that is not with a defining feature like a big sand quarry, it's actually quite difficult. And I thought they did a really good job. Yeah. And let's face it, if Thibaut Nice can mess up going over the spine of an embankment and end up with the bike on top of himself with a ripped open skin suit, somebody of his skill gets it wrong and bounces over the top of the bike, then it's not that easy. When you watch it back...
It was a tumble, wouldn't it?
It was a proper tumble. So as he went over, if you haven't seen it, watch it back and watch the chain set as he goes over the spine. He basically grounds the chain set out, and that's what then catapults him over. It's not the back wheel hitting, it's actually the chain set hitting it, and that's what then pivots over the chain set and pushes him down, and then lands with the bike on top, upside down, on his back. And when he went down, I just thought, that could be a real career stopper. Because it really hurts when you do that, he says from experience. Going to good stuff, Jens Adams. What a man. Leading from the word go. I've come back from glandular fever. I don't care. I'm just going to go for it. And he did. What a ride. I thought that was, I just thought it reinforced for me. I love riders who go for it. Definitely. Yeah. And he
did that. It
was
like real spirited, right?
Yeah.
It was real spirit. Like, I'm going to go for this. And we saw it earlier in the race as well with Orts and Dieter Speak. You know, they were just going for it at that race. And I think that's what's really good fun. I mean, okay, I think this is a good time, actually, Matt. I've got a couple of quiz questions for you today.
Oh, no.
Here's the first one. Right, here's the first one. Oh, it's an easy one. This is an easy one.
This is the man who says the exams are hard. You don't want to know what quizzes are like with you. Go on then.
Okay, so who won the men's race in Gulligan?
Who won the men's race? Matthew van der Poel.
Yeah. Okay, who won a C1 race in Troyes in France?
Lawrence.
At the same time.
Lawrence Feet, was it?
No, it was van der Poel.
No, it was David van der Poel, wasn't it? Of course. Oh, yeah. What a plonker. Yeah, of course it was. Yeah, van der Poel and van der Poel.
Yeah, it just
I wouldn't mind, but I searched out the coverage and watched it. It's been a bad day. Go on, carry on. I can only embarrass myself even more, let's face it.
So here we go. I mean, you know, what a record. Yeah, so it was, even though van der Poel, you know, they could only physically be, you know, in three places each over those 4 days, they still managed to get four wins.
Scary, isn't it? scary stuff.
But let's move on to the fourth race in 5 days, which wasn't in Holst. I'm going to not never say it was in Holst because I don't want this to be... I'm going to sort of give you a big bit of a preview here as to what I thought of it. I don't want this to tar the what real Holst is actually like. It was a fourth win in 5 days for Matthew van der Poel. He is clearly on great form. This time he finished ahead of Van Aert and Pidcock, who was in third. It's one of those ones where if that had been the race for the win, I think it would have been a much more of an exciting one to watch. But it's that kind of weird psychology, isn't it? You know, if it's a race for second, third, as much as you enjoy it, it kind of, I feel, it isn't ever quite as exciting as the race for the win. In the women's race, Celyn Alvarado finished third with Brand in second and Betsema finished first. Now, I felt that in that race there, Betsema was superior in every possible way on every part of the course. As much as I wouldn't call myself a Betsema fan, I thought she was an absolute amazing, gave an amazing ride.
Yeah. I sat there with conflicted emotions, I have to say. because you were clearly watching a rider who is on form, a rider who has got a really broad skill set, who can ride anything, who is dedicated, who is clearly working hard, who is ridden aggressively and really wants it, and does all the things that I'd like to see in a rider, and then adding the past history, and then I'm thinking, oh, should I be supporting? Should I be shouting? And actually, do you know what? It was a well-deserved win. You've got to say there was nowhere that she didn't look like she wasn't going to win. She just looked supremely confident, almost from the second corner, third corner. She was just like riding away. And you're just like, she's clearly got this dialed. And it was a course that had a bit of everything, albeit none of it spectacular. We've been relatively scathing of Bergenza at the World Champs. We were even more scathing of the Swiss version of World Champs courses on an airfield. And I think had this been presented to us to a World Championships, we'd have been laying into it thick and fast. But as a race that had to happen, and it had to happen in a secure environment with one entry and exit, which is why they've moved it from the centre of town, they did a good job with the banks that they had. And there was some ingenious use of them. But exciting? No. No. I didn't think it made for an exciting race. It just left a little bit. I didn't think there was anything there, really, that excited me in the women's race. And that's a really sad thing to say about World Cup, because usually they're the best. But maybe it's just because it came after Baal and Gulligan.
I thought that the course was... It reminded me of Irvine, where it had the big banks and they're kind of going... No, you've got the traverses, the ones going up, the drops in. But actually, I think that Irvine was a better course design, actually.
Yeah.
Because it had more challenges to it. Whereas this one, I think if you're a quality rider, there was nothing in that course which would have been a technical challenge. It was if you've got the power, and then apart from that, okay, there are some of the slippery climbs. But it wasn't quite the same as where you have to hit the rut bang on at speed,
I think,
which we saw in some of the other races.
I think had it have been a wet day and warmer day, because you saw the course starting to cut up a little bit as they went on through the racing, had it have been a slot fest or it'd been muddy or it'd been warmer, I think it would have been a better course to watch, a better race to watch. I'm glad it wasn't, in some ways, because I didn't want another Dendermonde slogfest. You know, I didn't want it looking like it was something out of the 1940s cross, 50s cross. But I think you're right, Irvine. It was progressive. It wasn't all the same. They didn't use the same style of course design on any of the banks, even though they were all basically the same angle. Whereas there, most of it was over in Notholst. So, I think, I liked Irvine. I mean, I've been lucky enough to be in there at all of the national events, and I thought it had loads of character, and I thought the course was a real nice mix of everything.
Yeah.
And it kept the racing exciting. That didn't happen for me in the women's, and it didn't happen in the men's.
I thought the course was, like, soulless, really, yeah. No, I mean, there were some other things there. We had the first time to see Mariana Wasp.
Sorry, listeners.
We saw Mariana Wasp with her black and yellow bike, which has been done in the same garage as Van Aert's. But we saw Kant having a real solid go. Mm-hmm. At this one, she was really going. I bet, you know, this was her fourth race.
I've been impressed. Kant, but she can't podium, can she?
No, she keeps getting rolled. Puck Peters rolled her here.
Yeah.
And where was it? Was it Baal Van Empel? Mm. So we got these young riders coming in and seeing Sanna, thinking, oh, I'm going to get you. And now she's got a reputation that you can roll her. Yep. And that's twice in a couple of days. And people are just going to see that jersey ahead of them and think, well, we can get another place on this last lap, and they've got more to gain than she's got to win, than she's got to lose. And I think we could see it again unless she sorts her head out.
So, in terms of being, I've been impressed by her determination and a steady progression, but like you say, getting rolled. Marianne Vosp, no. Got to say, unimpressed so far. And I don't think I've ever said that about Marianne Vos ever, but very unimpressed.
You know, I've got so far as being so disappointed with that, that we haven't got as far as trying to work out if she had actually was riding a different frame. But even that, we just, because even that she got the, because, so that it was a bike that she'd not ridden before, because she just looked so uncomfortable. And I couldn't work out why it was so uncharacteristic. I hope that
I think the game's moved on. I literally think the game's moved on, and the performances of the top level are so good. If you've been out of the scene and not as being a specialist and being so much of a road focused rider and just dipping into cross every season, you don't get that progression that's happened with everybody else, and everybody else has stepped up, and I think she's been a little bit left behind, and she's really going to have to pull it out. I can't see her challenging unless she does something miraculous in the next few weeks in the up-and-coming races. And I think that whole setup from the rattle can spray bikes to the dodgy stickers to the, you know, just a kit just coming out on time, to the whole team setup just seems a bit not quite slick. I'm trying to be really nice here without trying to call them slapdash, but it's pretty close. It's pretty close, and there's a lot of lessons to be learned by that team at the moment, and there shouldn't be, because they're all going to be very experienced riders and crew, etc.
Yeah, but and you look at what happened to them. I mean, what have you got a theory as to why they pulled Wout's bike out of his reach in the pit?
Well, I was going to say it was related to the commissaire who did the maths for the lap numbers and the timings, but I decided that was a bit cruel on the mechanic, because I'm not sure that he didn't, and it was a theory put out on the coverage, that he looked and thought, no, our rider's not here. Forgetting, of course, there's a change of bike and colour. And he just thought, oh, away you go. I don't know. We all make mistakes, and the guys are under serious pressure there. But that was spectacularly bad.
I wonder if they thought it was Pidcock coming in, because he's got the same helmet.
Yep.
And he's riding in World Cup leaders kit for the first time. And so if you look at him and Pidcock together, actually, particularly when you've then got unusual bikes, it could easily be a confusion that it was just a mistaken identity.
So long as you don't see them together. Because let's face it, I mean, there's been plenty of races where they've been close, where Tom's hiding behind Wout van Aert, and on a head-on shot, you think Tom's been dropped. Yeah. Or when they go the other way round, you just think, well, why are you bothering? Just ride next to him, because you're not going to get dirty. But blatantly, you can't hide behind Tom Pidcock if you are Wout van Aert. There's difference of scale. It's like putting one in a microscope and putting the other on a magnifying glass. The ridiculous difference. They're crazy.
Which brings me on to my next quiz question for you. This one is a hard one.
Yeah, okay. Do you know how bad a day I've had so far?
Okay, next quiz question then. This time we had Van Aert riding in the World Cup leaders jersey. How long ago was it that he last rode in the World Cup leaders jersey? It was a year that he won the World Cup. Quite a long time ago.
2000. Do you want it in years or do you want it in years ago? Off the top of my head, I was going for 17, but I'm not sure. It's not even earlier than that.
No, you've got it bang on. Yeah, 2017. Where the year he won last time he won the World Cup. So he picked up the jersey. Do you remember when there was a World Cup in Vegas.
Yep.
You know, those days. You know,
yeah, it was, sunshine, it was like, trails. It was like a,
yeah.
Travel.
All of that stuff. And then we had that World Cup in Fuji. Yep. You know, it was a long time ago, all of that stuff. And the year when the Coxsider was cancelled because of the wind, not because of the... Anyway, yeah, here we go. We're reminiscing. But it was, yeah, it was that long ago. So
is that's okay, one for you then, Neil. Is the Wout van Aert of then as good as the Wout van Aert now? Which is the better Wout van Aert?
That's a difficult one. I think he's better now.
But not winning.
I think he's...
Well, not
he's
as much.
Won more... Yeah, well, he's won more this year than he has since then.
I think he's the best rider now. I just think everybody else is as well. Just like the women's field and Marianne Vos. Everything has stepped up. Everything's moved forward. The courses, the speed with which people are taking corners, the risk people are prepared to take, I think has gone out as well. I think the course designers are improving all the time. And it's only subtle things. You know, we always say it's move the post 2 inches to the left or 2 inches to the right, 5 centimetres left, 5 centimetres right, and you change a corner immensely in how it rides. And I think that is translated across, and I think it does suit Van der Poel, although it's very difficult to think what doesn't suit him, much more than it does, clearly the old-style courses he can drop into, like Dendermonde, which are big diesel-y courses, and he does very well in, and he is improving. I don't think he suits the style of courses maybe as much as Van der Poel does. And Pidcock, to be fair.
Yeah.
Would Pidcock be as good if we were on lots of old-style courses? I don't know. Maybe he just changed his
training. I don't know that there have been many new riders coming in the men's field. Okay, we've got Easerby and Pidcock, the big two. But if you go... You know, obviously, I have gone back and looked at this 2016-17 World Cup season to get my facts right on it. But if you look at the top 10 from that year, you know, you've got Van Aert, you've got Kevin Powers in second, and Tom Moosen. Okay. But then four, you've got Van Turenhout, you've got Laurens Sveek, you've got Corner van Kessel, Matthew van der Poel, Toon Aerts. You know, it's this familiar list of riders who are up there still today, you know, years later. And the only new ones coming in really, I think, are Easerby and Pidcock. So we haven't quite seen the same flurry of new riders coming in the men's field as we've seen in the women's field.
I don't know. There's a lot rolling around in the mid to back end of the field, whether it's really is the turners that are coming through, the riders moving through, and you've seen the older generation move out, like the Dieter van Toren now, it's like the David van der Poels. They're not the same level. However, I think in the women's field, it's much more prevalent because it's right at the front of you. Because we're seeing these new riders, you know, everyone from Van Alphick, PTC going through to, you know, Saline coming through in the last 2 years. You've got Verse coming through. You've got Anna Kate. You've got all these youngsters coming through. And almost we look at Brand as being an older rider. And she's not, actually. If you actually look at age and experience, we've got Betsemer potentially coming through as a newer rider, but she's only newer because she's only just really sort of come up to the top. So Blanca Vass, Hontinger, PTC, you've got Van Empel. There's a lot more, and they're at the top. Whereas in the men's, they're in the middle to the bottom, and the dominant men are still dominating.
Yeah, but I think we could see... we're following it because of the British interest, but you look at the number of good, very good British riders we've got in under 23, and it's not just Great Britain. You know, we can see it in France, Switzerland, a lot of other countries have got the same coming through. When they moving up to elite, if they get that little bit of an extra couple of percent on the power, a little couple of percent on the endurance, a couple of percent on the experience, that they're getting all of this stuff, then we could have a very, very different elite men's field, just like we're seeing that we've got a very different elite women's field to what we had not actually that many years ago. Now, if you go back, if you did the same exercise with the, I'm not going to do it, but maybe next time, if you did the same exercise with the women, I think you'd find that the names were very, very different now to what we saw before. So let's actually have a look at the standings in the main series. In the World Cup, in the Women's World Cup, Lucinda Brand has she won it already? I think she has, actually. So she's well ahead of Betsema and Alvarado. So it's the race is on now for who's going to finish second. And yeah, I think it's because it's 40 points for a win. And yeah, Brand, I just realised that as I'm saying it now, Brand has now nailed that World Cup. In the men's category, then this is close at the front. We're going to get a cracking race at Overijse, where we've got Van Aert, Van der Poel, who are so close. They're 15 points apart with Van Aert in the lead. And this means that, well, of course, if he finishes ahead of Van der Poel, he will win it. If he finishes second to Van der Poel, then he will still win it. If he finishes third, then it would go on equal points, and then it would go to the result of the last race. So it's all to play for in the elite men. I don't know which one I'll put money on to win the World Cup, to be quite honest with you.
If it was money at the moment, given the lack of gigs, I know I'd be putting it on Van der Poel, to be honest. Is that who I want to win it? No. I'd like to see what Van Aert take that. I'd really like to have seen Van Torenham do it, but can't really do it. It's not going to happen unless the other two aren't there for some major reason. In the women's, yes, Brand's wrapped it up, and I think all power to her. She has been the rider of the season, without a doubt.
Yeah.
You know, the rest have snapped around and taken the crumbs, but she's had the lion's share of wins. She's had the lion's share of podiums. You know, it's podium after podium after podium for Brand, and she deserves to take that win. The battle for second place between Betsema and Alvarado. Watch this space. I'm not going to commit to one or the other. I think I've got to balance style of riding and aggression versus history versus just both being fantastic athletes. And, you know, no matter what's happened in the past, you don't turn a donkey into a racehorse. Doesn't happen. No matter how good your chemist is.
Yeah, or bad, your chemist. Anyway, then if we then look at Super Prestige. So in the Super Prestige series, Tunets is leading that by, well, it doesn't sound like much, 5 points, but if you bear in mind that the points go back in a range of one, I think he's probably got that one wrapped up, even though he didn't have a very good result at Zolder. So one more of those coming up. But we have to wait until February before that one, assuming, of course, that everything goes ahead. Easerby still has a chance, though, in there, which I think he will be delighted after what happened at Zolder. And then in the women's classification, close at the front this time, Brand and Alvarado, between the two of those. And we spoke about that one last time. And then the final bit of the standings to look at is in the bathroom trophy, the X20 Badcomers, used to be the DBV. Isabi is still well ahead in that. He's got almost 3.5 minutes. So long as he can keep it up. But this one, we've actually got three more races on the calendar. So that goes well into February. So he could end up with a nice Valentine's Day present on the 14th if he's able to keep this up and his elbow doesn't get any worse. Women's race, we've got, no surprise, Brand leading and then Betsema in second. So they're within a minute of each other. So still a lot to be raced for there. So that's where we are on the standings. Let's move into the last ronde. So, Matt, what are you looking forward to watching over the next few weeks?
I was going to go for reruns of Crossroads, to be honest, I think. Maybe. I don't think I'm going to be watching very much. I might be going back through the seasons just to, so that I actually have some answers for you when you come up with some really weird quiz questions. Realistically, not a lot, because I don't think we're going to see very many, if any, of the national championships take place. I think there's maybe 15 national championships in the offing. Current situation, probably not going to be a lot. We could take bets on how many of these there are. I'm looking forward to the end of the season, and I'm going to be watching the social media very carefully for what people do in their training camps in the period in between. Because what people do now and how they reset their season, for me, is critical. This period is when you can turn a bad season good by what you do in the next couple of weeks. Because if you think that you're not really going to worry about the national champs, you're talking a good 2 weeks now to get into the next heavy period. That's a good time scale. That's the time to recover. You can do good quality training. You can work on weaknesses. You can address any of those skills. You can sort out your drills in the pit so that you don't throw bikes or not get a bike. You can make sure that you're not going to catch your chain on top of any ramps. You name it. You can work on it. There's enough time. And it's about getting that recovery, because there's some riders looking very tired out there. And there's some riders, I think, who probably need a break desperately.
Yep. There's quite a lot of race. There's quite a lot of national champs on the calendar still. A lot of them have gone. Obviously, this weekend it was supposed to be the British national champs, which isn't happening. The one that you might be able to find some coverage of will be Belgian, coming from Mühlebecker. And I think this is very, very similar to Lowenhout, if you know Lowenhout. So it's got some fairly sizable flyovers normally. Whether they'll be there or not, if the race goes ahead, I don't know. It's also very importantly got a very nice long oopsie whoopsie section, just like what you have at Lowenhout. So you, even if you only watch a few seconds of it, make sure you watch the bit with the oopsie whoopsies, where you get one of the most, the nicest elements of the year, where you get the riders all bouncing up and down over the, what do they call it technically? I prefer to call it oopsie whoopsies.
I think oopsie whoopsies is a perfect term. I wouldn't change it. Although I did have images of you just loving the synchronisation there, watching synchronised swimming and you know, other such team sports where you have to be totally synchronous on the way through. I could just imagine that appealing to you, to be honest. It's sort of, you'd be doing some mathematics on it, some plotting where it went wrong and how it diverged from the norm, and yeah, I could see that happening. But yeah, I think the racing is going to be good at the champs that happen, because it's going to mean a lot to people. There's not a lot of racing. Riders need results. Whether or not those results actually then count for much, I'm not sure, because with so few national championships taking place, a lot of people are carrying those jerseys forwards for another year. A lot of people are going to be moving forward, and I think it does devalue the championships that happen, unfortunately. It's not going to mean the same if you were a national champion in 2020 as it did if you were a national champion in 21 rather than 2020. Because 2020, you had everybody there, in theory, in your country. In the 2021 championships, who knows? Mm-hmm. You may not even have one.
I think some of the national champs, well, even if they go ahead, the jersey is unlikely to change who's actually wearing it, because the fields aren't so deep, and there's some the real standout riders. You know, Vass has been wearing the Hungarian jersey for, I think it's 3 seasons now. Yeah, so you've got some riders who we see on the coverage a lot who are likely
to... You could argue, though, if you are domiciled within the cross scene, you'd be better waiting around in the right place to go ride the world champs than to trek back home, potentially get quarantined at home and not make it to the world championships. I think that's something that riders are going to need to bear in mind. The logistics are as important as form at the moment. You get trapped in the wrong place, you could miss the world championships. There's not enough time. Mm-hmm. And that's going to make a difference. Do you go back for a national champs at the risk of not making new worlds. I'm not sure that I want to do that.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, Matt. That's going to be interesting to see. But we will find out. By the time we have the next show, we will be able to review and at least look at how many went ahead to see whether there have been any significant changes in these. So there are some other races coming up. We thought we won't preview Hammer and Overosa because they're coming up at the end of this month. And so we will come back to you at that point. So we're going to wrap things up now. You can find us on the internet. You can find me at Crosscast Neil. Matt, where can we find you?
You find me at Matt Fixer Pain on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, pretty much anything else, I think, these days.
And we will speak to you in a few weeks' time. Until then, we'll see you on the other side of the tape. Bye.